In a world brimming with complexity, few creatures embody harmony like the honeybee. With tireless precision, she dances from bloom to bloom, each motion guided by millennia upon millennia of instinct, each act in service to the whole. And then there are the beekeepers, watchful stewards of this ancient symbiosis. Part agri-scientist, part poet, they move along their hives with the efficiency of Moe, Larry, and Curly, tending to the bees' needs as best they can comprehend, and with the infrequency of a waterfall in the Sahara, sometimes running off, flapping and flailing like a penguin on a hot sidewalk. This is their journey.
Welcome, welcome to Be Love Beekeeping, presented by our great friends and partners in beekeeping, Man Lake. Today's show features my recent conversation with a longtime Massachusetts beekeeper and entrepreneur, Rick Rowe. We're going to discuss making mead, making money in the bee business, and so much more. Rick is a wealth of information and an absolute joy to talk to. I think you'll love him. First, in our invention mention segment, I'm trying out a few new tools of the trade that may not be brand new, but some of them are new to me. Everybody has their own way of lighting a smoker, I know, and it's one of those age-old, how do I really figure this thing out? Well, and how do you keep it lit? You know, I usually just throw a bunch of flammable anything that I can get my hands on in that smoker, get it started, let it burn for a while, then add some fuel that I like. But last weekend, I tried this BeeStart smoker starter. It's this stuff right here. And I kind of liked it. What it is you've got these... What would you say these are? About 2 inches long by, I don't know, half an inch wide. And it's really easy to light these things, even on a windy day. So you just light two or three of them, put them in the bottom of your smoker, let them burn for a couple of minutes so it gets really hot in there, and then you add whatever fuel you like. It's easy. I like it. I know. I'm probably the only hobbyist who still doesn't have a hot uncapping knife. Until now, I recently tried out the Speed King uncapping knife, and wow. Now, realize, they don't work on all frames, especially if the bees didn't draw the wax out quite deep enough past the edges of the wooden frame. But for those frames that are drawn out well, take a look at this. It is fast, it's easy, it's clean, the wax comes off beautifully, and this thing heats up so fast, you almost need to be careful. Lastly, let's talk about the age-old hive tool. I know these things are like the tools of the trade. It's sort of like, you know, how can I make a better mouse trap kind of situation. Here's your normal old hive tool right here. Okay, it's got the bend. It's got a hole, I guess, so you can hang it on a hook or something. And it's got a nice scraper end. And these things work great. And most of us have used them for years. But have you ever tried one with a J-hook on it? I've been using one for a while, and recently I got one with an even bigger J-hook. And this thing is amazing. If you haven't used one of these, the idea is you put it in the edge of a frame, and you can pry it out with this. And you've got the leverage here on the other frames or the side of the box to push that frame up that may be stuck down with a whole bunch of wax or propolis. On the other end of this thing, they have really done a nice job of grinding on this hard steel, a very sharp edge. So you're scraping off wax, you're scraping off anything you need to clean up those frames and those boxes. They call this a multifunction hive tool. I like it a lot. I recommend trying something like this if you haven't yet. These are the kinds of things that are inexpensive and can really make our beekeeping adventures a little easier and a little more fun. And speaking of fun, let's get to our interview with Rick. I would like to welcome to the show. We're going to have an awesome time today. We're meeting with Rick Rowe in Massachusetts today. Longtime beekeeper. How are you, Rick?
Very good. How are you, Eric?
I'm doing fantastic, except for the cough drop. getting over a little bug from Epimondia, but other than that, doing great. You have a big operation, and it's going to be fun learning about different sides of the beekeeping business and the bee business itself, because there's a lot of sideliners and even hobbyists out there that are thinking, yeah, I want to figure out how to make a little bit of money while I'm doing this. And I think they're going to get some tips from you today, as well as tips about making mead. We'll get to that. So before we jump into it, for those that don't know you, how long have you been beekeeping? Tell us a little bit about your journey.
So I've been beekeeping about 30 years, and I started my business, New England Beekeeping Supplies, in 2006. And I ran that business out of our home, my wife Sue and I. And then we purchased a plot of land in Tingsboro, where we live, and we built a facility in 2019. And so now we have been operating out of that facility, which we call the Colony, since 2019.
So that was right before the pandemic.
Yes.
Was the pandemic good for business or tough on business?
The pandemic was, I would have to say, overall good for business, but we had to make some quick changes, temporary changes, but we got through it pretty good.
I know a lot of people jumped into it, and chickens and gardening and things like that for the first time. And some have already dropped out once they realized beekeeping is not easy. There is a lot to learn, but it's right. So rewarding. So for those of you that stayed, congratulations. It is super rewarding. I'm just going to go through a little list here. A few of the different aspects of your business, and then you fill in whatever I missed. Here we go.
Okay.
You make and sell mead.
Yes.
Beekeeping supplies. Honey.
Yes.
You do pollination.
Yes.
You do gift packages.
Yes.
You sell bees in packages and nukes. You have what you call an apothecary. Is that like soap and things like that?
Yeah, soap, lip balms, lotion bars, beeswax candles we put under apothecary too. Yeah.
And you do beekeeping classes.
And I've been teaching beekeeping classes for probably over 25 years.
What did I miss?
I think that's it. You know, we started our business out of our home, and then we started very small, just myself. And I figured I would start a little part-time job because it was coming after 9/11. And I had a commercial contracting company. So I was building houses and doing some commercial work as well. Boy, that came to a very, you know, almost a grinding halt. So I said, well, I'm going to take my hobby and see if I can make a little business out of it. And that was it. I started in 2006, in April of 2006. And then we've had 20 years of growth with our company, New England Beekeeping.
So a little business that took off. I have a feeling some of that's because you got kind of hooked on it. How many beehives do you run?
Currently, I mean, we've run up to 1,000, but currently, after we built our facility, we had to downscale quite a bit because it really changed my responsibilities within the company, and I couldn't be out in the field as much. So I believe, you know, next year we'll be probably running about 600 or 700 hives.
That's plenty. What size of staff do you have?
Yeah, we have six full-time employees, and we have about 8 or 9 part-time employees. Some people work one shift, and then other people, you know, work about 30 hours. So we have a really, really good crew at the Colony. Yeah.
I want to jump in first to the thing that I know the least about. And here's my disclaimer. I don't drink.
Okay.
So I'm going to probably ask some really stupid questions about mead, but I do find it super interesting. I know mead is something that's been around for hundreds or thousands of years. First of all, describe it and give us an idea of how you make it.
When I talk to people about mead, and boy, do I dislike really saying this, but If people ask me what mead is, the easiest answer is not the best answer. So the easiest answer is it's a honey wine, but it is not. Mead is not a wine. It's its own category. So mead is an alcoholic beverage fermented from honey and water and yeast. And then you can make variations by adding spices or fruits or actually it's unlimited possibilities on how many different meads you could make. And that's what mead is. It's the oldest alcoholic beverage known to man. We'll make that claim. And dates back, hundreds of thousands of years.
Compared to someone that owns, say, a brewery, how difficult is mead to make compared to beer?
I like saying beer is the most difficult to make, then wine, and then mead. Mead is not as hard to make as wine and beer. What we do in making mead is we have honey. We make batches in the sizes of we have two different tanks. So one of them is a 200-gallon tank, fermenting tank, stainless steel fermenting tank, just like you would use in beer or wine. And then we have two 300-gallon tanks. So we'll take a barrel of honey out of our warming room and bring it out at about, 120 degrees. And then we will start pumping that into another barrel. We'll be adding cold water to that barrel, and then we pump that into the fermenting tank. Then if we're using a fruit, we're going to pump that in, and we kind of mix it all into a barrel and pump it into the tank. And then we will control the temperature of the mead. At that point, it's called the must. And we'll keep it between 60 and 65 degrees. We have a chiller unit that circulates. It's like a double wall honey tank, except this is a fermenting tank. It's a double wall, and it runs through a chiller unit so you can control the temperature of your must. And then we'll pitch yeast into it. It will start fermenting within 24 hours. Usually we're in the fermenting tank for about 6 to 8 weeks. From there, we will pump it into usually it's going to be an oak barrel, whether it's a Chardonnay barrel, a bourbon barrel, a whiskey barrel, and sometimes just a stainless steel barrel. And we'll pump it into those vessels and we'll age it for a year.
How hard is it for a hobbyist to do?
Well, hobbyists, there's a lot of hobbyists that will make 5-gallon batches, or they might have small fermenting. So it's pretty popular. My first year in beekeeping is I wanted to try everything. I wanted to make candles. I wanted to, I wanted bees. I wanted to make splits. I wanted to go everywhere. I wanted to remove bees from houses. I kind of did it all. And then the mead was another one. My first year, I tried making mead.
And how'd it turn out first time?
Oh, it was awful. It was the worst. The worst part is you wait 1 year. And, for it to age and everything. And then you taste it, and it just was god-awful. And I actually took it. I had friends over, and we were planning on trying the mead. And I took the 5-gallon carboy, and I poured it out on the ground in front of everybody. And I said, nobody wants to try to taste this. It was bad. Then I met a friend who had taken my beekeeping class, and he brought a bottle of mead to the class, and when I tried that, I really complimented on them because it was very good. Because with mead, you can taste some meads, and some of them can be very bad, and then the very good ones are very rare. And so his was very good. So we started making mead together at my house, and then today he's one of my partners. He invested in my company when we built our facility. So Mike Mintz, and so we made the first good mead I made was with him.
And what flavors are your favorite or your best sellers?
So we have a honey that is in the Northeast area, and it's the honey is made from Japanese knotweed, and it's also nicknamed like bamboo. So knotweed is from the buckwheat family, but it is very smooth, very caramely, and it's dark. And when you hold it up to the light, it has a reddish tint. So I started making mead with that honey and started entering competitions. And I started scoring better and better and better. And to the point where I got a perfect score. And so I call that mead Red Bamboo, which is a straight traditional mead, meaning that it's only made with honey and water, no fruit. And we age it in an oak barrel. In most cases, we're aging ours in a bourbon barrel. And we've done extremely well with that one in competition. That's probably the best mead I make. But then we make one with black currants. We make one with blueberries. We make a sizer with apple cider. So we have like 10 different meads that we make.
All right. I'm going to be sure to put a link to your website in the show notes in case anybody wants to find you, wants to taste any of this stuff. They know how to look you up. But it's thecolonyma.com, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
We can ship mead to about 40 states. We're partnered with Vino Shipper. We're a little bit different. A lot of meaderies, there'd be like a microbrewery, you know, like a little brew pub. And you'll go in and it might be a small little restaurant and they'll have mead and you can buy mead by the glass. We're not like that. We make mead on site and then we bottle it and sell it by the bottle.
Are you a beekeeper who loves sharing tips, asking questions, and showing off your latest honey haul? Then join the hive. Introducing the Man Lake Beekeeping Community on Facebook, your new go-to for everything honeybees. Whether you're struggling with mites, trying a new winterization method, or just need to know what that weird thing on your frame is, our group is a supportive, spam-free zone for beginners and pros alike. Stop scrolling through endless forums and connect directly with beekeepers and the professionals at Man Lake in one buzzing place. We'll put a link to it down in the show notes. Just click over and join up.
Customers can come in our store and try a sample of mead, which is nice because it's just when we sample the mead, when we give samples to the mead, we almost like 95% of the people buy it. They like it. It's different. We do really well in the holiday times when people want to give it away as a gift and during the holidays. But we have a lot of fun with it.
All right. Let's shift gears. Let's talk a little bit about honey. And you
sure.
Just talked about the knotweed honey.
Yes.
Where else are you putting your bees? Or is it just in Massachusetts? Or
Our location, the colony, is in my hometown of Tyngsborough, Massachusetts, and we border 8 towns, and 3 of the towns that we border are New Hampshire. So Nashua, New Hampshire, Hudson, New Hampshire, Pelham, New Hampshire. So our bees are in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. At one time, we had 75 locations. Now we're running about 35 locations.
A little easier to keep track of that way,
yeah,
I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So besides the knotweed, what other kinds of honeys do you have, or are a lot of them just wildflower?
Oh, look, most of them are wildflower. So you'll have your early summer production, which will be like honeysuckle and Russian olive and black locust and dandelions. And then you'll go into all your apple and fruit blossoms, depending on where you are. And then you have your clover. Then we have a lot of sumac in our area. We do have quite a few linden trees, similar to basswood. Late summer, we have those, your goldenrod and your... We used to have a lot of purple loosestrife. We don't have as much, but it seems to be making a comeback. The state released some beetles years ago and ate up a lot of the purple loosestrife. They considered it too invasive. We'll have, like, right now almost everything is gone by, but we have asters, so a lot of wildflowers. We probably have 100 different sources. Early spring, we'll have maple, a lot of maple blossoms and a little bit of poplar. So it's a real wide variety. But every once in a while, like with knotweed, when knotweed blooms, it's like mid August to mid September, and it has such a distinctive color that you can really tell when you're producing that particular honey, and you can segregate it a little bit. But for the most part, there's not too many honeys that we can segregate unless we're going up to the blueberries in Maine, or you happen to get a farm that grows all raspberries and blackberries. And, you know, there are situations like that, but it's quite a large variety in the Northeast.
So what kind of advice do you have for someone that's going from one stage in their beekeeping journey to another? And maybe they get in as a hobbyist and they love it, and they're like, okay, I want to turn into a sideliner. And then they love that. And I want to do this full time.
Right.
What kind of advice do you have for some of those steps?
Yeah, I give a presentation. I've been brought into a lot of different clubs, and I did a state presentation on that topic. And so I tell people, figure out what you want. How much money do you want to make? Are you looking to supplement this? Are you looking to make a career out of this? And when I started, I said, I have to find five ways to make $20,000 in each segment. And then I went from there. And I never knew how it would grow. And today I can tell you that it grew into honey. New England Beekeeping Supplies, we're primarily a honey company where we sell to about 250 stores and farm stands. We sell honey in buckets. We sell honey in our store at retail, and we sell it online off our website. So that's what we became. But find your passion. Like, I loved making mead, so mead became a part of our business. We have five or six different people in our company that like making candles. So we all make beeswax candles, and we sell those in the store. My wife, Sue, likes to make soaps and lotion bars and lip balms, and she makes that at home, and we bring that over to the store and sell it there, so that we can take all these products, the honey, the mead, the candles, the lip balms, lotion bars, and we can package that into gift packaging, but we can place it on our shelves so that we have a large variety of things to sell in our store. Every area is difficult, especially selling packages. Transporting packages from Georgia to Massachusetts, I've been doing that now for 20 years, and I've made over 50 trips. It's 1,300 miles down to Georgia and 1,300 miles back, because I'm like in south central Georgia, Moultrie, Georgia, from Rossman Aperies. And then I also have packages trucked up to us from Wilbanks Aperies. So they do that transportation. But I've been going down to Georgia, you know, three times a year. For the first year I went once, the second year I went twice. So, and starting my third year, I go three times. And it's like you leave Massachusetts on a Thursday, drive 24 hours down to Georgia, you get there Friday, check on the bees, then we kind of go out to eat, we sleep in the hotel, we get up, we have breakfast, we go pick up the bees, load them up, and we drive straight home. Get home on Sunday, give the bees out on Monday. And then we turn around and do it right the second week, right after that. And then we skip a week and do it a third week. So there's a lot of difficulties, and I could write a whole book on transporting bees and what you have to look out for, and how you have to do it properly, and it's a real partnership with the apiary that down south that you're dealing with, whether it's Rossman or Wilbanks. That's a challenge. That's a tough way to make a few dollars. If you're starting a business, you really need to say, hey, how much do I want to make? What do I like to do? What do I want to do? And you start from there, and you see where you end up. You know, I never thought that I was going to build a facility. And we spent a lot of money building a facility. And then I didn't know how to set it up, because I said, you know, where do I put my bottling tanks? Where do I put my mead tanks? How do I design the store? And one thing we did was say, okay, we're going to put a building on our lot, but we're going to make sure a tractor trailer can get in and drive right around our building so we can unload the deliveries. You don't have to do that. Some people, my uncle, who taught me beekeeping, he had a little sign on his mailbox, and he made some nice extra money by just selling honey out of his porch, and did it for years.
One thing I love about beekeepers is they're just open to sharing all this knowledge.
Yes.
In some other businesses, there's so many of these are trade secret kind of things that you wouldn't be sharing, but beekeepers are so awesome about it. And I really appreciate you doing that for us.
I've always wanted to share my business experience. I've always wanted to share my mead making, you know, what I know about mead making and or what I know about keeping bees or what I know about running a business. I've never kept that a secret. I like to share. And I think it comes back to you because people appreciate that. I know when people come in my store and I see them like looking at a mite treatment or something, and I'll just say, hey, how you doing? Have you used that treatment before? Because we have a new one, right? Varroxan, that we've been using. And then we get into a conversation. And then at the end of it, they just look you in the eye and they say, wow, thank you for spending time with me. And that's the feel good part of the industry.
How's Varroxan been working for you?
I like it very much. You know, we needed something that lasts in the hive, that kills mites for an extended period of time. It does that. We need something that's not harsh on the bees, and it's not. So time will tell, but I think our bees going into the winter look really good. I have very healthy looking brood patterns. Now we're into October, and I always look, when I look at my bees in October, I want to know, is the queen still laying? And we're going in and the queens are still laying, which is a good sign because now you're going to have, you know, a young cluster going into the winter, which is always a plus.
What have been some of the just difficult things over the years?
Oh, I mean, I think colony health is always been very, very difficult since day one. You know, keeping the bees healthy. I mean, when I started, we tried everything and, you know, you had the pesticides, you know, your Apistans and your Kumafos, and you had all those things. And then you tried all your IPMs, and then you tried your screen bottom boards and your fogging with mineral oil, and then all these different things that came out, and then formic acid came out, and then there was different variations of that because everybody was trying to improve on what they had. So I think colony health has been and will be the struggle for some time, especially if we're introduced to new bee pests, and then it'll make it even tougher.
Don't say the T word.
Right. I won't.
And we talk about Varroa so much on this show that I'm glad we haven't talked too much about it today. We give people a little bit of a break today.
Yes.
Tell me some of the joys of beekeeping. What do you love about honeybees?
Well, you know, from the first day that I started keeping bees, I probably remember my first inspection that was with my uncle, you know, bringing me out as a kid, you know, I never forgot that. And then time went by, and then, you know, finally I asked my uncle if he wanted to keep bees at my house, and he said all his bees had died from mites. You know, it was in the mid-1990s. And so I said, well, if I get into it, will you help me? And from the minute I started going into the hives, I knew I was going to really like it. I started reading. I started going to beekeeping meetings. I started going to conferences and, you know, really learning about the bees. And so when you have that knowledge and then you know what to look for and you always see something new when you're going through the hives and, you know, you're outside, it's most of the time it's nice weather, hopefully. But yeah, you can't beat that. It's just, I love that. I never say I don't want to go to work, and I never say I don't want to look at bees. that day never comes.
Like they say, if you love what you're doing, it's not work.
It isn't. Right. Yeah.
Any advice that you might have for somebody that's brand new and just thinking about getting into beekeeping?
I've been teaching classes for a long time, and you know, I've taught several thousand people, and a lot of those people become my customers. And the first thing that I say in beekeeping classes, this isn't easy. It's not easy. Don't think it is. You have to do certain things when you're required to do them. And the bees don't wait. And if you don't do what you're supposed to do when you're supposed to do it, then there'll be consequences. And it makes the hobby more difficult, whether your bees will get sick if you don't treat them. Whether you don't manage them correctly, they'll swarm on you, and now you have other issues. So there's nothing easy about beekeeping. But if you're up for challenges, I played sports my whole life. Playing sports is not easy. You don't walk out on a basketball court and win every game you play. But if you work hard, you win most of them. And that's what I was in with a group of people, that we all worked hard, we all worked together, and we were successful. And it's the same thing in beekeeping. You know, if you work hard at it, if you like it, and you put your time into it, you can be very successful. But to put bees in your backyard and leave them alone, you will not be successful at all. And so I tell people, it's easy to fall in love with what you're doing, especially if you like being outside, if you like gardening, if you like bird feeders, if you just like to, you know, be outside and like nature, you're going to like beekeeping. And it's so fun because I always pull, you know, everybody taking the class, and you get everybody. You get doctors, lawyers, you judges, engineers, healthcare providers, I mean, construction work. You get everybody that's in there. And it's nice to bring all those people in and have something in common that you like honeybees.
Rick, you've been an absolute joy here. But before I let you go, I want to see, do you have any kind of a wild and crazy beekeeping story? I'll bet you have 50 of them.
Oh,
try to
sure.
Think of one or two for us.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I'll have to talk about my uncle. My uncle kept bees at my grandfather's. And he, my mother's the oldest of nine. And this uncle, I had a great relationships with all my aunts and uncles. I, you know, loved being around them when I was younger. But this one uncle, we'd never seemed to connect. But we did have one thing in common. I took care of my grandmother, and he was always over there because he lived up the street. So I took care of what I mean by that is I plowed her driveway, and I shoveled her walk all winter long, that kind of stuff. And I was always over there. So my uncle, who I think my grandfather had told him, hey, you know, suit him up and take him out on the bees. You know, I was probably 12 years old, and I never forgot that day. So we happened to be at my grandmother's one day, and I said, hey, you know, you want to put bees at my house? And he said, well, all my bees died. He said, they, you know, the mites came and wiped them out, and I don't have bees anymore. I said, oh, I said, because I thought I would give it a try. He said, well, come over to my house, and I'll give you a couple of beginner books that you can read, and then, you know, then let me know. Well, I read the books. I called them the next day. I read them all one day, and I was, hey, I want to do this. So he helped me get started. So my uncle, who I had really zero relationship with, next to zero, became my best friend. And he just passed away 3 years ago, but there wasn't probably many days where I didn't talk to him, or he wasn't over my house. And when I decided to start a beekeeping business, I had all the older beekeepers tell me, oh, no, you can't do that. You'll never make any money at it. It can't be done. And so to build something and then be successful at it, it's been a lot of fun. Without my uncle, I wouldn't have even tried beekeeping. And then because I tried beekeeping, it's now my livelihood. So we had a lot of fun. I used to tease him a lot, and he, you know, he was a real, real good beekeeper. And we would do hive openings for the classes that I would run. So I would send like 10 people over with him, and I would have 10 people over with me. And my line was to wait till he got into the hive and just yell over to him, Uncle Donald, if you need help finding the queen, just give me a call. I'll come over and help you. And he would get so agitated with me for, I can find the queen on my own, he would say. So, a lot of fun. My uncle, Don Landry, was, I owe my beekeeping career to him.
That really is part of the fun, is yeah. The sociality of it. Kids, aunts, uncles, grandkids.
Oh.
Yeah. People love it, and it's a good excuse to get together.
My brother keeps bees. I've had two of my nephews keep bees. You know, so you can, it's been passed on, yeah.
I only have a few hives, but just on this topic, the last time that we did a honey harvest, it was so fun because I had three grandkids here, a couple of daughters, son-in-law, and everybody got involved and everybody worked together, but had fun working together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got to go home with some honey. And what else do we do where we all come together and you know, do some kind of a fun work like that?
I love seeing when a mother and a father with their two kids, you know, they take our beekeeping class, and you know, and then I had a young man. He's a sophomore in college. Walk in today. He worked for me one summer, but he walked in because we extracted his honey for him, and I looked back and I said, boy. Alex, who's like 20 years old now, I said, how old were you when I met you? Because I let his parents put bees at my house. And he said, I was 5 years old. And so it was 15 wow. years ago. Yeah, yeah. It's and you know, they're still doing it today. But I tell people it's a great way to connect with the kids, and it's a great learning experience when you go through biology and botany and life cycles and development cycles, all that stuff that you learn through beekeeping. When those kids take those science classes or you know, whatever they do, they're going to have a heads up on other people who haven't experienced it.
Rick, I'd love to spend a summer with you because there would be so much to learn. But I'm gonna just give you the last word here. Give us one more piece of advice.
I guess my advice would be if you're into beekeeping, really put a lot of time into keeping the bees healthy. I don't know anybody that's got out of beekeeping that produced honey their first year. So you produce honey your first year and you're hooked. You know, you're hooked for a lifetime. Just enjoy it. It keeps changing. Keep up with it. Learn all the new things and just enjoy it. It's just a great thing to have in your life.
Beautiful. All right, Rick Rowe, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks for joining us on Bee Love Beekeeping, presented by Man Lake. If you like this content, I hope you'll share it with a friend. Follow and subscribe to this podcast, and even sign up for our newsletter at beelovebeekeeping.com. Also, just a shout out to Vita Bee Health for their support. We appreciate them. Vita's Varroa Control range of products includes Apistan, Apigard, and now Viroxan, extended release oxalic acid strips. Thanks, guys. And remember, if you're not just in it for the honey or the money, you're in it for the love. See you next week.